morning. It's Tuesday morning. It's time for the Doctor's Point of View. This is Debbie Bosky. Joining me this morning is Dr. Matt Minahan. He's an oncologist with Texas Oncology. Good morning, Dr. Minahan.
Good morning, Debbie. How's it going?
It's wonderful. It's Groundhog Day.
That's right.
I know. And Punxsutawney Phil in Pennsylvania did not see his shadow. So
no,
what does that mean?
What does that mean? Does that mean more winter?
No, it means spring is near.
Oh, great. Okay, good.
Although the weather forecast may disagree, you know, we seem to, we can't control it one way or the other.
Well, I can't say as we've had that bad of a winter so far anyway, down here anyway.
Right. Well, we haven't. And you're from where, actually?
I grew up in Connecticut. They're buried in snow right now.
Oh, mercy. Yes, they are. They've been getting the winter storm and blizzards.
Yes.
But thank you for coming to Texas.
Oh, happy to be here.
Yes. Well, anyway, you know, we talked about oncology, and, you know, everybody thinks, oh, oncology is just, you know, the gloom, but it's not, because y'all are there to help cancer patients or blood disordered patients, and a lot of times you get to see some really, really, really rewarding outcomes.
Absolutely. Here at Texas Oncology, I would say, you know, we do have a fair amount of our practice that deals with, like you said, blood disorders that are not necessarily cancer, and we can definitely help those people out. And we also see a fair amount of cancers that we're able to treat and make go away and not come back. And even in those patients where we aren't able to make the cancer go away, you know, we focus more on trying to figure out what the cost and benefit of, and by cost I mean to the patient, not financially necessarily, but symptom-wise, of getting treated and making sure that their quality of life is the main issue. And, you know, even these days, people with cancer that's spread can live for years with current, you know, treatments.
The proper treatment and following up. Exactly. Now, I know there's all different kinds. I know there's bone, you know, there's different types of organ cancer, but, you know, when everyone just hears the word cancer, they just seem to knock everything else out. So it depends on the stages and I guess primary sites and if it has already spread. There's so many factors that come into play.
Correct.
And I know I've got one that I want to talk to you just a little bit about. There's a lot of folks out there have diabetes, and then there's children with what we call juvenile diabetes. And I know there's been a lot of talk about leukemia lately. Now, I know, is there such a thing as juvenile leukemia? Or just, I know there's children with leukemia, but is there a term for that?
Right. There is, in general, a difference between the leukemia that children get and leukemia that adults get. And then there's also some overlap. So there's there's four main types of leukemia that you may run across. And we kind of split them by what cell type they started in. So there's lymphocytic type leukemia, which comes from cells that these are all related to the immune system, so these are all cancers of the immune system. And lymphocytes, you can kind of think of them, and a simplification, as your virus-fighting cells. And then you have myeloid-type cells, which generally turn to be other kinds of cells. A lot of them can be like bacteria-fighting cells and that kind of thing. But this happens, leukemia happens in the very early stages of the process. So you start with a stem cell in the bone marrow, and there's maybe six or seven different steps before that stem cell becomes an adult blood cell. And each one of those steps can have an error where it turns into a leukemia, and it starts overproducing itself. There's way too much of it. And depending on where in the step of the process that happens, you get different kinds of leukemia. And so you can get the lymphoid-type leukemias, which are like lymphocyte-type cells, which are your virus-fighting cells. Or you can get a myeloid-type leukemia, which is more your bacteria-fighting cells and some other types of cells. And then you can have what we call acute or chronic. Usually the acute leukemias are the ones that can hurt you very quickly, and they tend to happen at the earlier steps of the process, so the more immature type cells. And then you can have chronic leukemias, which happen in the later steps of the process and in the more adult versions of cells. So you can have the four kind of main types of leukemia are acute lymphocytic leukemia and acute myeloid leukemia. And then you can have chronic lymphocytic leukemia and chronic myeloid leukemia. Children, by and large, tend to get acute lymphocytic leukemia. That's the most common cancer in children.
Is there a specific symptom or some reason, or is it genetic? Or Is there something that we can look at in our children or our grandchildren that, you know, to kind of warn us or look for?
Yes, symptom-wise, it can be kind of variable depending on each. It's very patient-dependent, but because these cells live in the bone marrow and it's primarily a bone marrow type cancer, what happens is you can affect the other cells in the bone marrow. And then, of course, you know, if your lymphocytes are busy becoming cancer, they're not doing their own job. And so you can be prone to infections. And then the other cells that live in the bone marrow are the red cells, which carry oxygen, and the platelets that help you form blood clots. And if you've affected those cells, then you're going to become anemic and have a low red blood cell count. You're going to have low platelets, which means you're going to be more prone to bruising and bleeding. You can get fevers because your immune system isn't working well, so you're getting infections and fevers. But usually bruising, bleeding, fevers, and then just kind of generally what we call sort of failure to thrive, meaning you're just not doing well. You're not eating, you're losing weight, that kind of stuff.
So are they generally really pale in color or not necessarily?
Well, because you can become anemic, you definitely can become pale. And then you notice it, when you become prone to bleeding from low platelets, you tend to bleed on what we call mucosal surfaces. So gums, lips, nose, from your bottom, that kind of thing.
Wow. And that's in children and adults?
Yeah, that is a general sign of low platelet count. So it can be from low platelet count for any reason. But in this case, we're talking about a leukemia cell that's kind of overwhelming the bone marrow and preventing, you know, your platelets from being formed properly. So in children, it's that ALL. In adults, over the age of 40 or so, you really see the acute myeloid leukemia, or AML. And in young adults, so kind of 15 to 39 years of age, it's kind of in the middle. It's an overlap. And that's actually an area of great need, because in children we have ALL, and actually the pediatric oncologists are very good at curing this disease. Not everybody gets a cure, but by and large, they do really well. In adults over the age of 40, we're actually pretty good at treating it. Not great, but maybe 40 to 50% of people, depending on some specifics, can get a reasonable chance at a cure. But that 15 to 39-year-old age group, they tend to not do as well, and part of it is because they haven't been studied as well, and part of it is, for some reason we just don't understand fully, they get really bad versions of these cancers and just don't respond as well.
So, like, for the children, what is the course of treatment? Is it blood transfusions or just...
It's very complicated, actually. There are multiple phases to the treatment. Generally, it starts with what we call an induction phase, which is where you give very high doses of chemotherapy in order to really bring the leukemia in check. And usually this has to be done as an inpatient admitted to the hospital because, as you can imagine, if we wipe out your bone marrow with high doses of chemo, it takes you a little while to recover, and therefore we have to watch you really closely, make sure you don't get infections, give you transfusions, that kind of thing. And then after you've undergone that big induction and you recover your blood counts after your bone marrow recovers from that initial insult of the chemotherapy, then you go on to what we call a consolidation phase. There's also maintenance phases, and then 2 years, 3 years of therapy after that is an outpatient. So it's actually very, very complicated and depends on the type of leukemia you have. And we generally recommend that for childhood leukemia, you need to be treated at an academic center that specializes in childhood leukemia. This is not something you should be getting taken care of at your local hospital generally.
Okay. But the outcome is very good if you go through all of the phases.
For children with ALL, I'm not a pediatric oncologist, so I'm not quite as up on this stuff, but I believe that the cure rates are in the order of 70 to 85%.
Wow.
So, you know, a fair amount of people can expect good long-term outcomes. Now, the treatment is intense, and there are lots of side effects, and there's long-term risks associated with that intense therapy, but usually they do much better, as opposed to, if you remember when I quoted you for adult leukemias, taking all comers, all kinds of leukemias, lumping everybody together, the cure rates are more in the 40 to 50% range.
Wow. But it's just amazing how far it has come, because I remember, you know, my grandmother had it, and, that was, I'm not going to say how many years ago, but, you know, it was really horrible, you know, because
it is. It still is.
Correct. It still is. But at least we've made some advancements. And likewise, as well as with a lot of the cancers now, they're coming out with so much more studies. And I know we talked about the intense therapy for the leukemia with chemotherapy, which is also something that I guess chemotherapy, you pretty much have to do with most cancers, or radiation, or both.
It definitely varies by cancer. So there's many ways to treat cancer. And again, we kind of have to lump the what we call solid tumors, so solid organs like breast and lung and colon and prostate and pancreas, versus what we call liquid tumors or hematologic tumors like leukemia and lymphoma, those kind of things. Those are cancers of the immune system, whereas the solid and the blood, whereas solid tumors are just that, tumors of solid organs. And for the liquid tumors, like we've been talking about, leukemias, lymphomas, generally for leukemias, you're looking at chemotherapy and mostly just chemotherapy. When you're talking about lymphomas, it can be a mix of things, and those are almost treated more like solid tumors. So we can just talk about solid tumors for a second. The first thing you do when you get a diagnosis is you need a piece of tissue to figure out where this started. Did it start in the lung? Did it start in the colon? What is the tissue of origin? That's the most important thing.
And
now,
how do you determine that?
With the help of your friendly neighborhood pathologist. So
okay.
Basically what you do is you go in and you get a sample of the tissue, and different tumors have different amounts of tissue you may need, but basically what you need to do is get that on a microscope slide and send it to a pathologist who is specifically trained in looking at specimens and can help you figure out. Now, some of it is just what it looks like. You know, they know what these tissues look like. But as we're getting more advanced, there's all kinds of special stains and molecular and genetic testing that they can do. Now, sometimes we don't know. In about 10 to 15% of cancers, we end up with what we call tissue or tumor of unknown primary or occult primary, which means you've got cancer, we know it's a cancer, we can see it, but we don't know where it started. We can't find that initial spot. And we have protocols for what to do in that situation. But in about 85% of cases, we're able to figure out where it started.
Amazing. That was my big thing, because I have heard that term before. Well, you have prostate cancer, but it's not your primary site. And we're like, so that means I have a second cancer?
But right. So the typical places that cancer will spread are bone, liver, lung, and brain. Those are kind of the most common sites of spread. So if you have a cancer that's in the bone, liver, lung, or brain, you have to figure out, did it start there? Is this a primary tumor of this spot, or did it spread there from somewhere else? Other organs like prostate and colon and things like that, it's usually a tumor that started in that spot, but not always, and we always end up with surprises. So we definitely have to, you know, look at these pathology reports, and a lot of times if it's borderline, we'll actually get on the phone with a pathologist and talk to them and really kind of go through it. I did that just yesterday with a patient of mine. So the one caveat I'll place on that is, as we're getting more and more tools in our tool belt, we're finding out that even cancers that start at different sites might have the same molecular pathways that are out of whack, and sometimes we can use the same drug in what vastly different tumor types because the molecular pathways are the same. So it used to be the dogma was, you know, tissue of origin was king. That's what told you how to treat it. And nowadays we're finding out that it really is more about the genetics and the molecular pathways. So things are kind of shifting as we're learning more.
Awesome. The main thing is that we're making progress.
Absolutely.
And the best form of treatment is getting your regular screenings regardless and getting regular checkups to
right.
The sooner you catch it.
Ounce of prevention is a pound of cure, right?
Exactly.
Right now there's several cancers that can be tested for, and as far as routine screening goes, most people know about mammography and breast exam for breast cancer. There's also, of course, prostate cancer screening, and there's a lot of controversy about that. But what we recommend here at Texas Oncology is that you have a thorough discussion with your primary care physician about the pros and cons of screening for prostate cancer, because you do need to make an educated decision. More recently, there has been approval for low-dose CT scans in smokers to screen for lung cancer. And then, of course, there's colon cancer screening, which has a variety of methods. Most people are familiar with colonoscopy, but there's also other things you can do to screen for that. And then, of course, most women are unfortunately very familiar with the rigors of going through cervical cancer screening, which is not the most fun thing to do, but it actually works really, really well. So that's one of the screening tests that you definitely should keep doing. And of course, you know, skin checks are helpful to make sure that you're not getting melanomas or other kinds of skin cancers. And those are the most common kind of cancer screening tests that we do. And then after that, once you're diagnosed, we talked about getting tissue of origin, and then you need to stage. And staging is really about figuring out how advanced it is, and that tells us how to treat it. We've talked about chemo, we've talked about other drugs, but there's also surgery, radiation therapy, and what we call targeted therapy, which goes after molecular targets, and biologic therapy, which can take advantage of the immune system. So there's lots of different ways to fight cancer, and it all depends on where did it start, how advanced is it, and what kind of genetic and molecular markers can we find to help us, you know, leverage different treatment options.
Awesome. And then, of course, I know February is National Cancer, or is it Thursday's National Cancer Day?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so, you know, this is a great way to raise awareness, and, you know, like we said, the best thing you can do is make sure you're plugged in with a primary care physician and a gynecologist, if appropriate, so that you can take advantage of all the screening tests available to you. And then, of course, if you end up getting that diagnosis that everybody fears, then we here at Texas Oncology are more than happy. We have to see you. We have surgical oncologists, radiation oncologists, medical oncologists, all on board, who are more than happy to see you and you know, do the best that we can to make sure that we are able to take care of you.
And we're so very fortunate that you are now in Bastrop, so we don't have to go into the bigger cities to
That's
get
right.
the treatment.
That's right. I see people here 3 days a week. We are a 5-day-a-week business, so there's two other physicians that come out here. We have all kinds of medical oncology services and hematology services. We do everything except blood transfusions. And we don't yet have radiation oncology, but everything else we do, chemotherapy, hormone therapy, immunotherapy, and then, of course, just regular visits.
Awesome. And so what is the number there? What number do you call for appointments?
So you can call here at our office. It's 512-308-9024, and that will get you to the main line here, and we can get you plugged in depending on who you would want to see and what you'd be wanting to come in for. We can get you plugged in and get you the number for the new patient scheduler, no problem.
All right. Well, Dr. Matthew Minahan, thank you for joining me here this morning, especially on Groundhog Day.
My pleasure.
And of course, for coming to Texas, and we certainly appreciate all of your partners there at Texas Oncology and Bastrop, who take care of all of our listeners, and for always sharing information and letting us know what we need to do and letting us know the progress. And we are certainly excited to know that if just because you hear that word cancer or leukemia doesn't mean it has to be the end of the world. By no means, it's a scary thing, but there is treatment and alternatives.
It's always scary, but you know, it's nice to have someone for us, this is our day-to-day lives. This is what we deal with every day. And so rather than going on the internet and scaring yourself to death, I always encourage people to come in and hear what we have to say and before you panic.
And that's so calmly, easily said. But we certainly appreciate you, because I know you're compassionate about it, and I know you understand the, you know, how an individual feels when they hear those words.
That's right.
That is first and foremost most important, that you understand that where the individual is at that point in time in their life. So
absolutely.
Thank you for joining me here this morning and for, like I said, sharing information with us, and we thank you very, very, very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Debbie.
All right. And I'd like to thank my listeners for tuning in to the Doctor's Point of View right here on your hometown radio, 98.3 KULM.